Good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and we have a very delightful paradigm shifter with us tonight. A woman who has taken so many of the spiritual principles, put them into real life, and she just elevates that whole process of trying to balance what, how many levels and dimensions and spirituality and loaves of bread. Welcome to our show, Polly Campbell.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me.
I love the title, Imperfect Spirituality. It's very intriguing, isn't it?
Well, it's real, you know. I think historically there's been a vision or a view of spirituality that we had to do something or get it right or be perfect to make this stuff work, and I look at it a little differently.
You really do. What got you going? You've had a lifetime of some physical disability, right?
I have. I have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, which even though you're a grown-up, they still call it that because I was diagnosed when I was a child. And I've had, you know, life challenges like everyone with a chronic disease and other things. But this idea really evolved into this form about 5 years ago. I was really facing a lot of transition, and life wasn't feeling very good. I had a nine-month-old baby, which is wonderful and very challenging. It was very challenging for me. It changed my relationship with my husband and my body and with my job.
Did your body suffer from having had a child, or was that?
It was, you know, nursing and doing all those things is changes how your body looks and feels. But the physicality of lifting a baby in and out of a crib and chasing a crawling baby around, and that put a strain on the arthritis for sure, mm-hmm. bending and lifting and moving. So my joints were more swollen and stiff and sore, which anyone with chronic disease knows adds a mental and emotional dimension too. When your body isn't working the way you'd like, it you think about that differently, and that can lead to some frustration. And at the same time, all this was going on, I was diagnosed with melanoma.
Oh my.
Yeah, there was a lot of transition in my life. And so.
And you said earlier that it also affected your relationship with your husband. I'd say, well, duh.
Exactly, right? And I wasn't surprised by that. But what I did is I didn't manage it very well. So instead of looking at all that was working, I began focusing on the ways I was letting down the world and the things that weren't working and the things that were going wrong. And I really went into a place of disconnect between my head and my heart. And the spiritual practices, the meditation and the mindfulness and the things that I had practiced for years, I wasn't practicing, or at least not in the same way. They weren't helping me in the way that I was used to. Because, to be honest, if I had any free time, I wasn't going to the back bedroom to meditate. I was sitting on the couch and drinking a glass of wine or taking a shower, you know. And so I realized that there was this big disconnect between who I was and how I was behaving, and I needed to find my way back. And so I started to integrate the spiritual practices I have always used into my life in a more practical way. And I realized that I didn't have to measure up. I didn't have to be perfect. I didn't have to fit some ideal to be the best mom or whatever. I could just be who I was. And if I threw all my energy into being that person, flawed and all, I would be more successful and I would feel better. And so that's what I did.
Hmm. How were you raised? Were you raised in it like a Buddhist culture?
No, I grew up on the coast of Oregon in a two-parent household, and both my parents were, you know, we had our stuff, but they were involved in my life and good parenting. I had a younger sister, and no, none of this. You know, I would say if there was any connection there, it would be to a Christian God, but we didn't go to church. Mm-hmm. We talked about God as a creative force in our life, but there was no tradition as far as religion or thinking this way. My connection really started when I was about 8 years old and I was in a newspaper contest. I was selling newspaper subscriptions, and the kid who sold the most got a bike. And the bike was sitting in the window, and it was this white, red, white, and blue Huffy with the banana seat, you know, and the squishy.
Oh, I remember those, yeah.
Awesome. All I wanted was this bike, you know, and I wasn't winning. Marcy was winning. And so I thought my bike chances were doomed. And at the same time, interestingly, my father was reading a book by Wayne Dyer, one of his early pieces. And my dad started talking to me about this notion that how you think about your thoughts or how you connect to your beliefs can change your life. And he started talking. And I figured as a kid, you know, I wanted stuff. So I figured, well, if I change my thoughts about this contest, if I stop thinking about not winning the bike and I start focusing on winning the bike, what will happen? And I won the bike.
Yay!
And so, you know, that, hey, this spirituality stuff works. I can
get
stuff.
At 8 years old, come on.
Yes.
That's wonderful, Polly.
Well, and then it evolved. I think with the chronic illness, I had a lot of opportunity to get quiet. I couldn't do things the way many children were doing things. So instead of going out on recess, I would go to the library and read biographies of other people overcoming challenges. I was looking, you know, mm-hmm. I was looking for ways where I could make this work for me and turn create the life that I wanted. And it just kind of all coalesced into this book and in this moment.
So that's really the authentic you, eh?
It really, you know, when people read the book, I want them to hear me talking. When they meet me, I sound just like the book. It's very important for people to realize that, man, if I can do this stuff and if it works in my life, it's a very practical approach because I'm really down to earth and messy and sticky and all those things that you read about.
So. I love that. So you changed when your baby was around 9 months old, you went back into looking at your beliefs or what happened?
Yeah, you know, things weren't working and I was feeling really dissatisfied. And for a long time, not a long time, but for a while, I started looking outside of myself. You know, I think that's our default mode. I went to blaming my husband for the things that he wasn't doing. And
right.
I went to, I'm just too tired, so I can't make good decisions. And finally, I realized the dissatisfaction came because I was no longer tapping into my heart. I was trying to become something I thought I ought to be or should be instead of who I really was, which is really a flawed character. You know,
wow, I do that still. You know that?
Yeah, me too. Me too. This is the practice, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
Stepping into our authenticity. And so that 5 years ago, what I realized is when I couldn't do the meditation the right way or any of those things the right way, I stopped doing them. And that's when I felt like I lost myself a little bit. So what I did is I backed up and I went back to that stuff and I built it in throughout my day. So I would start my morning with a 3-minute ritual instead of a half hour meditation. And I found ways to connect to myself throughout the day that would work while I was doing the chores or changing the diapers or cleaning the cat litter or weeding the yard or whatever it was I was doing.
And you were a stay-at-home mom?
I work, I'm a writer. I was working part-time when she was small, and now she's in school, and I work while she's in school. And
have you been a writer for a long time?
Forever, yeah.
There was a little story here where you were working as a public relations person.
Yes.
I love that story. Can you tell people that one? I loved it. I went, yeah, that's what happens.
You know, I had gone from the newspaper world. I was young, and I had gone from the newspaper world, which I loved, into public relations because it was a better paycheck. And I just felt like it was soul-sucking, and I know people who are very good at that job and really love it, and that was not me. I was not good at it, and I did not love it. And soon after I took the job, I realized I needed to get out of that because I felt like it was really incongruent with the kind of person I was. I was doing things that I wasn't really comfortable with personally, making reputations for people who maybe weren't earning them, and things like that, a particular group of people I was working with. So when I got there, soon after I realized I needed to go, I just decided to spend the year in study of learning what I didn't want to do as a small business owner. So I just watched everything that was going on around me and made plans to leave and start my freelancing career full time. And
that would be freelance writing, hey?
Freelance writing from magazines is what I wanted to do at that point. And, you know, there's a lot of barriers. Like anything in life, people will rise up to tell you how this isn't going to work. And on the day I resigned my job, my boss stood up and told me that, you're never going to make it. This isn't going to happen. And I think you have those moments in your life where you get to pick. You know, I think we choose our beliefs. I think they shape the life we live. And that was one of those moments. I could decide that he was right and it wasn't going to work and I'm certain I would have been out of business, or I went the other way and figured it would work and I would figure it out and I knew I could do it. And that was about 18 years ago. So things are working still.
Wow, good for you. Well,
thank you.
But I really like that story because I think we all, whether it's from teachers when you're a little kid or parents mm-hmm. or relatives that are a bit unruly or whatever, we all have those. And I like what you said, that's where you choose your beliefs, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think exactly what you said, that they come up, you know, we get a foundation of these when we were kids. A teacher says something and we take it to heart, or our parents or whatever it is. And a lot of times they take root on our subconscious and we don't even realize it. But at any point in your life, you can go back and you can look at those beliefs and you can decide what you're going to go with. And so I think, why not choose the helpful one? You know, our beliefs are just thoughts that we've repeated. So yeah. Pick a new thought. And why not go with the one that is going to support you?
So did you do that as you started your freelance job? Did you really pull on your beliefs? And what you're saying is you bring them up and you see them and know them. And
right. You bring them up. You get rid of those that aren't helping. And sometimes you do that over and over again. You know, sometimes it's a matter of constant awareness. Oh, yeah, I no longer think that. Let's let go of that. But in the writing job, I absolutely did. I believed that this would work, and it wasn't always logical, and I think that's where your faith comes in and your optimism. And on the days when I couldn't do that for myself, I found people that could do that for me. For example, I have a really strong network of friends, and one in particular was my cheerleader. And on the days when I didn't believe that it would work, I called her, and she believed it would work. And so she reinforced that. I think, you know, this is not all of a sudden you're struck by lightning and you're squared away and all these beliefs are intact and it's easy for, that's not what it is for me. It's a daily practice, and it's finding the people and the triggers to support me when I'm not practicing real well. Yeah. You know, I think you do whatever you can to sustain the belief in who you are. And when you outgrow the beliefs that are working in your life now, pick a new one. It doesn't have to be dyed in the wool. If I don't want to do writing anymore, I can change that tomorrow. But yes, on the dark days when the checks were not coming, I really went back to what I knew myself to be at that moment and what I wanted to create in my life, and I repeated them. And when you establish a belief like that, then the behavior becomes tangible, you know. So I started acting like a writer. I put, instead of public relations consultant on my business card, I put writer on my business card, even though I didn't have any writing clients. I just started to create the behaviors to support that belief. Uh-huh. And we do that with good things or bad things, so pick the one that works.
Tell me, I don't want to pry, but I do, you know.
Hey, we can talk.
I was just thinking, you said you were really frustrated and blaming your husband. Your daughter was 9 months old and all that. Did you manage to weather the thing with him? Did you stay with him?
Yes, we've been married 10 years and we're happy, and he's great. He's my number one cheerleader, and I think I do that for him. And yeah, it wasn't a scary time. It wasn't a moment where I thought that the marriage would fail. But I did have thoughts like, is this what it's going to be? Well, can we be happy with this no time together and this no sleep and, you know, all the other things that came? And yeah, again, that I think goes back to when I reconnected with myself and started to do with the things that restored me, I could see the gifts in him again. I think we do that for each other. I was more connected. When I learned to be more compassionate with myself, I also became more forgiving of him and the places he was failing and maybe not doing as well, because we were learning together, for sure.
Oh, and that's what relationships can do for us, isn't it?
I think, you know, I think the people that we're closest to in our lives are often our greatest teachers. And if we can settle into that and be a little uncomfortable at times without getting angry and open to that, I think I've learned a lot from him, and certainly it's been a gift to me. I don't always like it, I will tell you.
I love the story about the kitchen sink. Can you tell that story?
About the cleaning the kitchen sink?
Yeah, cleaning the kitchen sink. I just howled, but I loved it because it was, well, anyway, I'll let you tell it.
Well, I write about so many little moments in that book. This was a perennial one, and I think it's the one you're referring to, where, you know, he would never clean out the sink, so he would do the dishes, and he would never clean out the sink, and instead of it being a dirty sink, I would make it all about me. Oh, my God. I've told him 3 times he doesn't respect me enough to clean the sink. And is that what you're referring to?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I loved it.
We make these little moments personal and all about us. And really, when I talk to him about it, he's like, oh, I just forgot to clean the sink. And I was in the mode of, oh, he doesn't love me enough to clean the sink. And he never listens to me. And what kind of marriage do we have? And he's like, oh, no, I just didn't clean the sink.
But I laughed because you said you showed him how to do it. And he still didn't clean the sink.
Right. You know, it gave sink cleaning lessons, you know.
With a lecture, probably, if you're like,
absolutely. And, you know, and I still do those things today with people in my life, and I have to sit back and say, really, is this a problem with the sink, or can I let it go? Is it, if I want the sink clean the darn sink, but me lecturing him and haranguing him didn't get the sink clean, and it just left us both feeling really bad.
But didn't you say, at least in the book where you were talking about it, you said when you really kind of got clearer with yourself and it didn't matter so much, he started cleaning the sink.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I gave up on it, right? When I let it go.
When you let it go.
When I let it go. It was about me. I let it go. The sink all of a sudden started getting clean. And it's clean now. I mean, he's out there with my daughter right now giving her a bath and doing the dishes. So, you know. Things come together.
Is he a writer as well?
No, he's a lab tech. He works in the lab at a hospital. He's very science-minded, so
this stuff is
a different way of thinking for him.
That's actually good that you've got a balance like that.
It's a good balance, yeah.
Yeah, so you went how's your health? When you're becoming more authentic, doesn't it have an impact on your health?
Oh, I think so. You know, first of all, with the arthritis, it was something that I had grown very comfortable in living with from the day to day, but it wasn't something I shared with people ever. I didn't want to appear like I was making excuses. I didn't want people to feel like they had to help me or feel sorry for me or any of those things, even though there were times when I needed help. Mm-hmm. When I really stepped back into myself and really became comfortable with all that I was, the flaws and imperfections and all the talents, that also came up more. It's part of who I am, the arthritis, and I began sharing that more with people. I got better about asking for help because I was less worried about appearing to be weak or frail or whatever. And it really developed an intimacy among the friends in my life because they felt like I finally had let them in and that we could be closer and trust each other more. So that is that kind of connection is good for your health too. But what I really found is when I stopped trying to hide and deny and you know, fix all these physical things that I felt were going wrong or weren't perfect, I let the pressure off. So instead of pushing myself to go to the gym 7 days a week for an hour at a time and working out and just destroying my body, the arthritis would flare so big, badly, I couldn't really move.
Oh, so it didn't help the arthritis at all?
No, not in that way. Mm. But you know what? I changed that to say, I'm just going to nourish my body. I started with 20 minutes of activity a few days a week, and now I work out regularly, and I'm stronger and healthier because
Oh, wow.
I connected to what I could do, which I'm not an Olympic athlete. I'm not going to be, you know. So when I scaled back and looked at who I was instead of who I wasn't, I started doing more appropriate things. I started eating better. I started taking care of myself in a different way, getting more time for myself, which is really what I needed at that time. And that improved my health dramatically.
Well, you did write a really wonderful section here on resistance. So you're telling me that you lifted the resistance or you looked at it and you walked through it. You want to talk a bit about resistance?
Well, I think resistance keeps us stuck. And I certainly was in that place. When we refuse to look at what is in our life, then we are in resistance. And often that moves into what if or what might be or I wish. We start what-ifing our life away. What if this happens? What if that happens? And we never really deal with what is happening. as long as you're in that mode of resistance where you're denying or hiding, you're not making progress and you're not growing through it. You're staying stuck in whatever condition it is that most often you don't want to be in. The minute you can accept what is and see the truth as it lays out before you, I have rheumatoid arthritis, or I lost this job, or whatever it is, without the story, I don't have to say I have rheumatoid arthritis, so I'm a terrible person, I can never do anything in my life, or I lost my job and I'm unemployable, so I'll never get another job and I'll lose my house. You don't have to create the drama. You can simply say, I lost my job, or I have rheumatoid arthritis, or I'm getting divorced, or whatever it is for you in your life. And when you do that, you are able to reach a place of acceptance, which means you see what is, the truth of it, you have a clear-eyed perspective. And from that position, when you have good information, truthful information, you can decide what to do next. You can make a choice. Acceptance isn't resignation or giving up. It's seeing what is and knowing the cards you're dealt, and then it's choosing to stay in that marriage or to leave that marriage or to get counseling or to do whatever it is next that suits the next moment to move you through it. When we're in resistance, we don't do any of those things. We just say, oh, I wish I didn't have arthritis. So you take no action. You just spend your wishing your life away, and you continue to deal with that situation time after time, day after day, without any forward momentum or even good feeling. And when I stopped resisting those things that were showing up in my life and saw just what they were, oh, this is my situation, okay, then it became less dramatic and easier to deal with. And really, things that I was viewing as problems at the time really weren't problems at all. They were simply situations. I didn't have to judge that circumstance. I could just move with it. And that changed my experience of that.
Wow. Well, you know, you talk about, and I think this is an aspect of resistance, but part of it that I picked up for myself was that there's things I would like to do, like you mentioned, doing larger groups. But part of me goes, that never works for me, and I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. And I read this, and I went, well, gall darn it. That's the resistance is how we think about it, isn't it? It's like, okay,
yeah.
So I've never been able to do that. That's just a stopper, right?
Yeah, you know, I think so. And I think when you say that, it's a whole lot easier for me to hear that resistance from you about your situation than often it is to hear within myself. We can hear it when it shows up for other people because they'll say something like, I never, or I can't, or this won't work, or I'm just on, or whatever those absolute terms are.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that's not true because life is fluid and organic. There are ways of learning and moving through. So if you're finding the inner voices sounding like that or talking like that or putting up barriers, just pause a moment and take a deep breath and do exactly what you did, which is, oh, huh, that's interesting. There's a little resistance. Maybe I need to go in and look at my beliefs about that thing,
mm-hmm.
or maybe this isn't truly what I want and I need to explore that, or maybe I just need to get curious about that resistance, because often resistance is an inroad to fear. It shows us what we're afraid of. And it shows us often what we want most too.
Well, I think being afraid of failure is a huge thing for many of us for many, many different situations, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yet you talked about failure as being what, an opportunity? I can't remember what
yeah,
you said, but you have wonderful.
I think it is. I think imperfection is an opportunity. You know, I think everything shows up that way. And again, it depends on how you bring that into your life and if you notice it when it comes in. But right, look at creativity. Look at anything that we've accomplished in our lives. If we're not trying different things, if we're not creating different things, then we're probably not creating the life we desire, or the book, or the artwork, or the movie, or, you know, the business, whatever it is, the family, whatever it is you're trying, because creativity, part of its nature involves failure. Otherwise, we wouldn't have to make anything new.
Right.
If everything was perfect the way it was and we didn't have any need to grow or expand, then we wouldn't. You know, for it's an aspect of our identity. What happens is we attach that failure, and we think, oh, failure is bad. I'm a bad person. I'm not good enough. And everybody's
gonna
find
out. Yeah, we attach it
to
our identity, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think it's that. It's simply an experiment. It's a way of expressing, and often failures yield to great results. And often in the failure itself, we see down the road that maybe it wasn't as bad as we thought, or we got greater meaning from that experience because of the process we were embroiled in, or whatever it was.
I wonder if, you know, a lot of your process, I'm going, if people go through tremendous loss mm-hmm. when they're young, which you kind of did, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at the beliefs around, I mean, I wonder how to get through a lot of emotional things that way. Have you ever had a huge emotional deluge?
Yeah, you know, I think, and again, what I was saying a little bit ago is, you know, this stuff isn't going to make you skinny or blissfully happy every minute or wealthy or any of those things. It may come to that, but that's not what this is about. This is about living better in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel a little better in the next moment and the next moment. And pretty soon, you know, life is made up of all these little moments. If you're feeling good in the little moments, then you're living a pretty good big life. And so when you're stuck in that place of loss and or heartache or fear or whatever it is, just allow yourself to be in that a moment. We like to move out of these big emotions as fast as we can because they're uncomfortable. And for me too, I mean, I'm dealing with the same stuff. But what happens when we move too quickly out of the big emotion is we usually behave badly, and then we have to go deal with that baloney, right, because we've gone off on somebody else or acted inappropriately.
All right.
Or we have numbed ourselves with another behavior like shopping or drinking or web surfing or reality TV watching or whatever it is. So instead of actually going to the source of the emotion and learning something, we have created a cycle where we just have to numb it every night. So we'll have that glass of wine after work every night because we don't want to think about our job anymore or whatever it is. And we never really learn anything about the situation. When we can be curious and say, oh, and I experienced this yesterday. I had a disappointment in my family yesterday, and I wanted to be angry, and I wanted to, you know, just not deal with it. And instead, I just had a minute to myself, and you go to that emotion and say, huh, I'm wondering why I'm feeling so angry here and so disappointed. What is that? And then that emotion starts to transform. It starts to become a avenue into yourself. It offers insight and information that you can then use to go forward. So what I learned was this disappointment actually made me look at myself and some of the things that I had failed and some of my responsibility in a situation that wasn't very good. And I had to step up to that. But the minute I did, it started to change and move, and I could go back and repair the relationship and do other things.
So you didn't just go into fault, like,
right,
for yourself.
Right, no, we didn't go into blaming or any of those things. It didn't mean it was comfortable, but it means that I'm not dealing with it today because it's over. Whereas, you know, our emotions, I think, are just big sources of information for us. If we can stay with them for a few moments and examine them and notice what, you know, often we think we're angry and we're just feeling hurt or whatever it is, then they become a tool that can help lead us, give us information and insight.
Mm-hmm. I like your little exercise. I really appreciate what you just said, actually. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And I appreciate your exercise of looking around each day, I guess, or regularly and saying, what is? I really like that. I went, oh, yeah, because I don't mean to, but every now and then I find myself judging a lot of what is.
Me too.
Like the messy sink or the, you know, sometimes we work. You work at home, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes it's really hard to be a woman working at home and trying to keep a home looking
Absolutely.
Like you're the housewife of the century.
Huge challenge for me. And, you know, that's a great that exercise came out of my own practice. Say what you see, because I have this beige colored carpet, mm-hmm. and I have a 6-year-old, and I have a couple of cats, and the carpet isn't so beige anymore. You know, it was more white, and now it's stained and all those things. And I would walk from my office down the carpeted hallway to the kitchen to get my coffee. And every morning I would be, oh my God, this house is so dirty. I need this carpet. I hate this carpet. I can't live with this carpet. And the carpet was taking over my life, right? Because I would see these stains and everything else. So I started using this practice, the practice of say what you see, whereas you just pause and you look around and you see the carpet and the wall and you don't judge anything that you're seeing. I started using that during that walk in the morning. So now I just see the carpet and I see the brown spot on the carpet, but I don't have to judge the brown spot. And it has eased my stress so much. I no longer get worked up about the carpet because it's just a piece of carpet. And when I do judge it at all, it's usually from the gratitude standpoint. Like, I'm really grateful I have carpet, even if it's stained at all. I'm very fortunate that I live in a house that has carpet. It's transformed that morning routine for me because instead of dwelling on what wasn't working, I just saw what is. And I don't have to associate any judgment with that at all.
Isn't that wonderful?
So yeah, it's fun. It's fun when you notice how it can be that practical for you.
You know what I was thinking, too, when I was reading it, is how many times, like even with the carpet, okay, because my carpets need cleaning.
Yeah.
I've been procrastinating on getting them done, and they're kind of beigey colored, too, and have had a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah.
But I was thinking how so much of it, like what is, uh-huh. is a kind of a good way to separate from comparing to other people or some sort of mythical high standard, you know, like with our bodies. You have some stuff about that as well.
Right? Yeah, well, I think that we can never measure up, right? Because mm-hmm. we pick things and judge ourselves against them, and we don't even know what's going on behind the scenes, but we'll look at a model in the magazine, or we'll see another mother who apparently has it all together because she's not wearing her sweats, or, you know, we see other writers that are publishing in big magazines where you're not, or people whose businesses are more successful than yours, you think. And first of all, we never have all the information. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. That successful business owner may be in debt up to his eyeballs, but we don't know that kind of stuff. So when we judge ourselves or others, not only are we not getting good information, but the information we are getting doesn't make us feel good. We're creating an ideal that we can never live up to,
right?
Because we still have these flaws and imperfections, and we still have these things that aren't working in our eyes. So we need to get over that, I think. And I think the way to do it is just to look at that stuff. Like I said, some of my greatest flaws are also my greatest gifts. I'm a very intense person. Now, that doesn't always work well for people, but as a writer who's self-employed, that works very well. You know, that helps me to be disciplined, and that helps me to go after other assignments and so forth. I am a very persistent, determined person, and sometimes that comes off as being a negative in relationships because I don't let people off the hook. And when living with a chronic illness, that's been essential to keeping my body going and doing things that are hard and pushing forward. So these things that we view as our flaws and imperfections or liabilities in one area of our lives are also great gifts. And I think our ability to use them appropriately is part of our practice. You know, I don't need to be determined and hard-headed with my husband. That's not helpful. I can scale back a little bit about that. But when I'm getting up out of bed in the morning or needing to go for my exercise walk, that's going to require a little determination with the arthritis. And so then I can scale it up a little bit. When we put our energy into what is working for us and all the talents and abilities we do have and using them in a way that is effective and helpful, then we can change the world. If we stay fixated on measuring up to some ideal or hiding our flaws, that's a lot of energy going to something that is not going to help us or anyone else.
And, you know, most people hide most of the time.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting statement, but I bet that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true. I just see it a whole lot, you know, and a lot of times. Well, in any case, there's another thing. There are two things I wanted to ask your opinion or your perspective on. The word spirituality is really interesting to me, because I wonder what that really means to you. I'm just playing with you here. This is semantics.
No, and that's great, because I ask people at my book readings what it means to them also, because I think it's a very personal word. I think it's like God or faith. You know, everybody comes with their own beliefs and attitudes about it. For me, spirituality is a relationship with my higher self. It's a way of connecting to my essence, which I see as connected to the God force or the source or the universe, whatever you want to call that energy that I think we all have inside. So when I'm doing a spiritual practice or I'm living as a spiritual person, I'm really looking at it as a person living with a deeper connection or a deeper relationship to myself, my higher nature, my highest good.
Your dharma, your purpose, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, my passion and my God and my purpose. And it's a reminder that I've got that within and trying to stay close to it, I guess, when I'm practicing my spirituality.
That's wonderful. That's very magical, isn't it?
It is. It can be when I'm there, you know, and it certainly is. I think now it's just the groundedness in my life. It shows up for me in a real practical way. Like, I am a marvel, and so are we all, and I get this experience, and so even the hardship, the heartache, or whatever you experience in your life becomes an experience as this spiritual being. It doesn't have to be something that you worry about all the time, or that you can't. Sure, there's pain, you know, and there are things that I have in my life that I wouldn't have wanted, but since they're coming in, I might as well learn about them, and that spirituality helps me to do that.
That's wonderful. You give workshops, do you?
I do. I do some online e-courses, and I do workshops on, you know, living with the stuff practically in the middle of your day and how to do that, and you can find a list of some of what I do at www.imperfectspirituality.com, and the book's also there. And all my workshops are really geared to practical, in-the-moment situations so that you walk out with maybe a deeper connection to this stuff or your higher self and can really use it in the day-to-day moments of your life.
I love that. We'll check that out. There's another thing that I am very, very interested in lately, because, of course, I'm getting older, but there's a thing about there's a high percentage of our population that's going to be aging, right? And there's the older people that I visit seem to have trouble finding the wisdom, no, not the wisdom, the power of their age category. And I'm going, your work would be very helpful for a lot of them, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I think this work is good for all of us because we can learn from each other, but also because this is a part of who we are. You know, the nature of the universe is to be expansive creative force, and we are that too. So when we behave in a spiritual way or we practice this stuff, we move into that creative, expansive nature that is innate to us. So I think it feels good, and I think it doesn't matter your age. You know, each age brings interesting experiences and challenges, for sure. And some of the most spiritual people I know are the oldest people I know, and they have incredible grace and perspective and
wisdom.
And talk about being aware of their beliefs. You know, they look back and they see how their life's set up, and they're changing the way they think about dying or living now. And they've been great teachers to me. My grandmother was a great teacher in this way to me.
That's wonderful. I know two kinds. One is that kind, and I know some people that see no redeeming features in in aging, and it's like, and I'm thinking of them, and I'm thinking of tipping them back into their authenticity, because it's the beingness that's the spiritual connection, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because I think we see this as something to do, and it's not. It's who you are. It's just about reconnecting with that or reminding yourself. And, you know, to be at whatever stage in life you are and being connected to that essence feels good. And it's a powerful place to be. And when you do that, it's world-changing for the rest of us, because when you are connected to your purpose, and again, purpose isn't always an active thing. It as far as getting out and getting a job or whatever. In my mind, purpose can also be how you relate in the world and how you touch the people who come in contact with you and so forth. And when you are connected to your highest self, then you are radiating such a peace and essence that it changes the experience for the rest of us. And there's a lot of science behind this. You know, they talk in, they call it mirror neurons. They talk in terms of emotional contagion. And what that research shows is that when you come in contact with another human being, you spread that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you reach out with kindness, you're spreading that kindness to something like 15 degrees out. So people you've never met will be an influence of your single act of kindness toward another. When you are in a bad mood, and we know this if you're, you know, sharing a house with a roommate or a partner or a husband or whoever it is, if you're in a great mood and that person comes in unhappy and upset, immediately the mood in the household changes to some degree. So they know that we are spreading and exchanging these kind of emotions. So imagine if you are a person connected to their spiritual self, the highest source of all that you are, everyone you come in contact with is going to feel that energy, and there's going to be a tremendous momentum and peace that is world-changing outside of your room, you know, outside of the place you're sitting. So
and I agree with you. And also, I was just thinking the words that we've been using, like resistance and all that, is when you do that, the persons around you feel permission to be who they are. They feel released from all those things.
Right, we're free. Yeah.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I get chills when I think about it. And that alone, you know, Veronica, makes me wanna be connected this way more often because it is, you know, I get a lot of people asking about how can they worry about this stuff or focus on this stuff when there's so much violence in the world, there's so much poverty and hunger. Well, you know what? Take care of your household first.
Mm-hmm.
If you are more loving toward your children or your husband today, that is going to change the world. If you are kinder to the driver who cuts you off on the freeway, you will change their day and they will change somebody else's day.
That's
you know,
for sure.
We know what we're doing wrong when we've screwed it up. But imagine reaching out with that level of kindness and compassion because you are so connected to your authenticity. It'll change your neighborhood and your community and your family and ultimately the rest of the world. I really believe it.
I do too. And also when you're going into the internet, you have access to being global in physical
Absolutely.
Ways too. We can do it that way. And you're doing e-books or e-classes,
yeah.
eh?
Yeah, e-classes. And we're reaching people in a lot of different ways. So if you want to sit and learn this stuff in your pajamas, tap in. We can do it that way, too. I'm on the Daily Om, which is a great assortment of 100 different teachers who are just fabulous, you know, lots of topics. You can check me out there or those other teachers. And, you know, we have the book. And there's all sorts of ways now to start thinking about connecting to this part of who you already are. So you can go to and find my classes and workshops at imperfectspirituality.com, and the book is there, and the Daily Om has my classes. I'm teaching a new class on Udemy, which is Udemy.com, and that one is a video class about how to release these sabotaging beliefs. So you
oh,
can be
that's
free
what
and
I want
start
to talk about.
Year.
Yeah, let's okay. talk some more about that, because that's really important.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we need to become aware of what we're thinking in the first place. And again, this is a good chance for acceptance. You don't have to judge it. But if there is an area of your life that isn't working, that's a good thing to look at. If your body isn't what you want it to be, then look at that, or your finances or your spirituality or your whatever it is. Usually when things aren't working as we desire, it means we have a foundation of unhelpful beliefs or bad beliefs in there that are sabotaging us. So, for example, I'll give you, I've always been a writer and it's my passion and I like to do it. But
and you're good at it.
Thank you. I work hard, you know, I hope I am. And I think I am. But until the last couple of years, I've never made a ton of money at it. And I couldn't figure that out because I was doing really good work and I was getting my work out there in a lot of places. Well, I had to go through and look at my beliefs about that. And the number one belief I had was that writers never make any money. And it has been something that I was taught. You do this because you love it, not because you're going to get rich and all these things. And until I really went through and explored that, I didn't know what was catching me up. Well, I had this belief. Good writers don't make any money. And I felt I was a good writer, and that's what I wanted to be. So the money, I get to a certain financial level where it was just enough and then nothing extra. When I explored that belief and took that out of my belief system and replaced it with one that was more helpful, then the money started to follow, and I've tripled my income in a year.
How did you take it out? Did you just feel it, know it?
You faded out on me there. I'm sorry.
How did you take it out, the belief?
When you identify what isn't working, then you go in and you look at the truth of the situation and pick something that's more helpful. So, for instance, if you uncover a belief that you come from a family of overweight people, so therefore you can never lose any weight, mm-hmm. and yet you want to lose weight, but mm-hmm. but your belief is that, well, everybody in my family is fat, so there's no way I can lose weight. Then you replace it with, okay, maybe I have this belief, but I can also hold the belief that every day I can do something to nourish my body.
Mm.
So you pick one that's going to be more helpful, because our old beliefs, they're going to hang around in the back of our brain, but we don't have to live from them anymore.
Oh, I see. So you don't have to get rid of them. You don't have to be sure you've done that. So
what happens when you choose a new belief, mm-hmm. then, because beliefs are intangible, but they set up our behavior that creates tangible results.
Yes.
So when you start living from a belief where every day I do something to nourish my body, pretty soon that behavior is going to set up and you're going to eat an apple instead of the potato chips or whatever it is. And your behavior will start to come forward. You're going to work out instead of watch TV because you do something every day to nourish your body. That's just who you are. That's your belief. So as you do that, the new belief that you're living from actually gains in power. And the other one, the power of the old one is diffused.
So the new belief, you reinforce its existence by actually acting out what it is.
Right. You behave from it. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, you need to be very conscious and say, right, this is who I am now. But ultimately, over time, it starts to take hold, and it actually develops new neuron pathways in our neural pathways in our brain, and it becomes a habit for us to live from this place. So over time, that becomes more of who we are, and the behavior supports that, and it becomes a cycle. Now, the old belief is going to still come up, but when it comes up, you'll be more aware, and I say it out loud, oh, no, that's not who I am anymore. I see you. It's okay. You don't have to be mad. You don't have to judge yourself for eating the cake instead of the apple. You can just say, I do things now that are nourishing for my body. And you move more in that direction. And it feels better. You know, you will feel the change in your body because now you're focused on what you do well and what you do and who you are rather than what's not working for you and your repeated failures and so forth. And that's a good example of how you can use the things that aren't working as a gift. Look at what isn't working in your life. Look at how you'd want it. Shape a belief that supports that thing, that desire, and behave from that belief.
How long did it take you, for example, to triple? You said in a year you tripled your income.
Yeah, as far as the real tangible results, I tripled my income in a year. And it's something I work on all the time as far as my belief, because I just ran into it again. You know, the book is doing well, and I'm grateful. And it keeps coming up. And instead of believing that I'm entitled to this, I'm like, wow, okay. Huh, I wonder what's happening. Like, why would this be, instead of understanding and owning it, that this is a creation that I'm in, and of course it's going to do well. I'm coming at it some days from the other side, like, oh, I wonder what's happening. I must have just got lucky. And I don't really believe that, but that's the old belief. Because when
it's like programs inside, isn't it? It's
right.
Like little voices inside of us, eh?
It is.
But your family was very supportive of you to write, were they not, your mom and dad?
They were supportive of me. Absolutely, my family's been supportive. And when I quit my job to write full-time, mm-hmm. it was very uncomfortable for my mother. It was very scary for them. They, you know, I had a condo payment, and I had a car, and I was a grown-up with real-world responsibilities, and they never told me not to do it, but it was uncomfortable for many people in my life, because you don't just quit your job when you have responsibilities to be a writer. And yet I didn't know another way. It just felt like I needed to live in alignment with who I knew myself to be.
But it's also really interesting that sometimes we get a lot of our beliefs from the lineage, from the family, from the practically
Absolutely.
From the DNA, right?
Yeah. I mean, and our teachers and the other things. Yeah, that's why I think it's important to spend a good amount of time in the beginning identifying what the beliefs are in the first place. And you don't have to judge those people either. I mean, I know many people who who are Republicans because their parents were Republicans. And these people are 40 years old now, you know. So go back and look at the beliefs shaping your life. You may not even be aware. And once you notice, then you can pick new ones if you want. Some of them are helpful. You know, you don't have to throw them all out. But
I appreciate that you said you redo certain belief things like the money thing.
Yeah,
I think we all need to hear that because there's
we grow up and out and shift and life is fluid and our beliefs need to support that. Absolutely. I'm sure I will again too, you know.
So what do you think is happening with our species? What do you think of the shift?
With this time, you know, with the way the society is going?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I think things externally are not working in a way that are comfortable with us. And I think we have spent a lot of years blaming and trying to change that external shift so that we would make more money during the dot-com era or we would have different presidents or whatever. And I think now we're recognizing that it's not working, that until we change the interior landscape, until we reconnect with our highest source and our highest sense of ourselves, that that it's not going to become, the external world is not going to be comfortable for us to live. And so I think we're turning inward, and I think we're turning to each other and looking at that interior landscape a little more seriously and connecting to that, and I think that's where the real shift is occurring.
I think you're right, and when we were back there talking, just a few minutes back, talking about how you can radiate your consciousness and then it's infectious, I think that's all a part of the shift as well.
Don't you notice it in your work, too? Are you hearing from more people who are doing this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and really caring about integrity, authenticity.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a part of the whole move around the world. I think it's just going in through all countries, no matter how they appear through our media.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. I think it's real. I think it's real interesting. I think people are at a place where they're ready to grow and to expand, and they're open to, you know, we talk about these new things as new ideas, but these are centuries old, thousands of years old, a lot of these ways of connecting, and I think it's exciting. I think the things I'm writing about now and selling to magazines and even this book 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't the audience that there is now, and people, this is resonating with people, and they want to learn and try, and they're bringing their own ideas to the mix, and we're all expanding, and it's a pretty fun time, I think.
Yeah, and it's not all about being the one or the star and all that media hype. It's really different. It's a real flow.
Yeah.
But I've so enjoyed, I really love your book, and I love what you're doing. I'm so excited that you are doing all this in the world right now.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot coming from you, because I know you've done this work for a long time, but I'm excited too, and I feel excited for the book and the discussion that it's opening among people, and I'm just grateful I can share it, and I'd love to, you know, talk to more people and have them read the book, and hopefully it'll help us all get through the moments of our day with a little more grace and a little more fun too. We don't have to take this all so seriously.
That's what, you know, I wanted to say this, and it's going to sound like I'm not belittling the book, but I want to say it's an easy read, and I appreciate
good.
That so much because everybody's so dang busy.
Yeah,
and there's
thank
a
you.
Few people I'd like to get it to because they need to have something they can just grab for 3 minutes and 5 minutes and 10 minutes.
And, you know, I worked really hard to do that. This is my life, too. I have a kid. I have a job. I have a household. And so there are in-the-moment practices, which are things you can literally do in 30 seconds to uplift your moment.
And she has them outlined with a beautiful little graphic, so you can just flip through, can't you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Pick one in the moment. It's open the page. It'll take you where you need. The chapters are short and broken up for that same reason. There are stories of other people who are living this stuff. And, you know, life is messy and interesting and fun and rewarding and all those things. And I wanted this book to be accessible for people at whatever stage we're in, and we're all working on it together. So thank you for saying that, because this is a book you could pick up in a second, and I think you'd leave feeling better.
And you help people make peace with the fact that other people's lives are messy around them. Thank
it's
you
not
for
It's not
going
to be smooth sailing, but it doesn't. That doesn't have to be, we don't have to judge that as a bad or good thing. It can be an interesting experience no matter where we're at.
Yeah, well, thank you, Polly. Polly Campbell of Imperfect Spirituality. I've so enjoyed our chat together.
Me too.
And Keep going, girl. You're doing great work.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much for having me. What a privilege.
What a privilege for me. Thank you.
All right.
And to all listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Paradigm Shifters. And for any more information, Veronica at Veronica Entwistle, or I think it's PollyCampbell.com. Is that right?
It's actually imperfectspirituality.com.
All right. Thank you so much. Good night, everyone.